No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
All right, Rod and I are here live. What is it? Maybe 20 minutes after the 49ers and Bears had a Sunday night shootout, which leaves the 49ers to play the Seattle Seahawks Saturday night. How did we get screwed out of an extra day by having such a fantastic football game? What the heck? Yeah. What the heck's going on here?
That was awesome. Here you go. A week, one day shorter rest week. You're welcome. That's crazy.
Exactly. Exactly. The Niners, you know, the Niners did their part. Chicago also did their part. We'll talk about them because we saw them last year, and what a different team this team is versus
completely different team.
But yeah, so the Niners go, hey, we're going to give you guys a game here. We're going to have Brock Purdy doing the Dougie a bunch of times. Our defense is going to be so bad that Caleb is just going to be firing lasers all over the field. And it's going to be one of the most exciting Sunday night football games in history. And the NFL's like, yep, thank you very much. Now you have to play in 6 days. That was not fair, but that is the NFL, man. They are all about the ratings and all about the big games. And they're creating this insane week 18 in which two games are win or die. I think, what is it? Carolina and Tampa and Pittsburgh and Baltimore. I think they're both win or die games, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've got, Pittsburgh too on Sunday night. Yeah. Pittsburgh, Baltimore.
So it is, so it is incredible.
This is exactly what the league wants. I just think, being a Niner fan, I would have liked to see us on Sunday night, but I guess maybe not two Sunday nights in a row doesn't work. But if you want to look on the bright side, we get a marquee matchup Saturday night. We'll be the only game in town. So that's something, I guess. It still sucks, though, with, our injury situation that we get one less day for Trent and George.
Yes. The Trent thing, I didn't even really think about that when I saw the Saturday. I was like, that's one less day for George. But you're right. The Trent strained his hamstring. Was it like on the first series that they had?
Mm-hmm.
And yep. He was out and he didn't play for the rest of the game. Austin Pleasant was in the game. And we thought maybe that if they lost this game that people were going to be on the train of blaming him, but thankfully they won. They gave him help, but he held up for the most part in the end there. Also, Brock's feet helped him out a lot too.
Absolutely.
So I guess here's where I want to start. So the Bears and the Niners just trading touchdowns back and forth. It literally was who's going to end up with the ball last? Like, that's what I thought it was going to be. So Juwan Jennings scores with just over 2 minutes left. He makes some great cuts. The Bears are just tired as all hell. He gets in the end zone. And I looked at the clock and I thought, you know what? They scored too early. Did you think that they scored too early? And that the
Absolutely. Absolutely. I thought 2:15 was way too much. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I got my brother. He's a Bears fan. So we were watching the game together. And it's one of those things where you don't want to, like, you know, it's easy to sit on the couch and say, wait to score.
Yes.
So you score when you can. But I did feel like we left them too much time. And we left, and it turns out it looked like we left them just enough, just too little time.
and so here's the thing about the whole scenario, because the Bears, I just watched Varsity Blues the other day. And the winning touchdown to get into the playoffs in Varsity Blues is a hook and ladder. But the 500-pound offensive lineman, Billy Bob, is the one who catches the lateral, and he trucks into the end zone to win the game. They didn't have Billy Bob on that play, but I think they ran that play. Like, I think Ben Johnson was like,
watch,
we're scoring. Like, this is the genius play here, and we're scoring. And when they didn't score, they kind of rushed. Like, it was, I would like to see how the team reacted, but it was almost like once Caleb threw it, he was probably thinking touchdown. And the fact that they didn't score, they get down to down the ball with 4 seconds left, and then it leaves them for one play. And Caleb scrambles to his left, and you know, the funny thing about those plays, like, you think about it, and you think that the defense is actually the team that is in the worse off play. But if you think about how offenses work, because they're so close to the goal line, you only have a small window to actually run your offense. And when they showed the wide view of the play, I know Collinsworth thought that maybe there was a guy crossing in the end zone that he could have thrown to, but I feel like I think it was actually D. Winters who was there. I feel like he was sniffing that one out, and he probably gets a hand on it. But there was a wide receiver in the far corner on the opposite side of the field where the Niners were just like, you know what, we're only protecting this weak side because of where Caleb rolled out to. But that dude had the arm strength to get that ball over there. He just didn't see him. And so Bryce Huff goes for the sack, and he swipes at his feet and he dives. And when he didn't get him, I thought, okay, we got a man on the ground. We are now playing 10 against 11. This is not good. And Caleb just could not pull the trigger. And if he did pull the trigger earlier, I'm not sure that there was anybody open except for that one person way on the other side of the field,
which is just an impossible throw.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically throwing that thing up for grabs while you're falling down. And then he throws it into the ground, and the Niners come away with the victory. Based on the way they played defense, I was actually surprised at how well they played some of those downs. They brought pass rush. Chase Lucas got shaken out of his boots on one play and gave up a big play, but they were very decisive in their tackling. They were responsible in their coverage. I just assumed when Caleb had the ball, I'm like, okay, he's going to throw to the backs a couple times, and then he's just going to unleash something down the field, and it's going to be money. I guess the worst play was poor Luke Gifford in pass coverage, trying to cover the tight end. Like, that was the worst one. But still, you know, he made – that thing could have went for that to the house based on how it left Caleb's hand. So the way they played defense in that last series, I thought was really strong. It was maybe the best defense that they played all game long, but I fully did not expect them to stop the Bears in any way. And they did.
Well, that's the thing. I think we've seen time and time again that the deficiencies with the defense have been well chronicled, so I won't do that here again. But we have seen time and time again that Bob Sala, if you can take it down to a play-by-play scenario, he can dial up plays and get these guys in position to make plays. Like he said last week, you know, yards, you know, we've long since lost that battle. We're going to give up a ton of yards. That's just what it's going to be. But we just try to turn those touchdowns into field goals and get these guys off the field, on third down. And they were effective in doing that. And when it was time for them to make a play, they made several plays in that last drive where we hadn't got any kind of pressure at all. They went zero blitz, and where they lined up, looked like we're going to do zero blitz. One time they came, one time they dropped out. But yeah, he was just making beautiful calls. And, we pride ourselves as, kind of looking at things in an elevated way. If I'm one of these jobs, he's the guy that I want. If I'm Tennessee, I want him. He's a difference maker. Yeah. He is a real difference maker as a coach. And as much as a 49er fan, I would love him to stay. But as a person, and somebody who sees myself as ambitious, I don't feel like I want to keep somebody who obviously has ambitions to do that here just for my feel good. He deserves one of those jobs, and I hope he gets it. Now, what ends up being, there's a lot to talk about this game, so I don't want to spend too much belabor this, but there are several jobs I believe that are worthy of him, and then there are a bunch of them that I believe won't be. And it would be easier to stay. Who wants the Cleveland job? Or
so you're saying that if Mark Davis comes over and he's like, yeah, Pete didn't work out, you think,
nah, I'm good.
Yeah, Sala should run. He should just be like,
I'm good.
You should just book it from that meeting.
Right. I would definitely stay the San Francisco 49ers coordinator for at least one more year. Now, it's interesting when you hear like Rappaport talk about what a deal to stay would look like. The first thing is, you'd be talking about a bunch of guaranteed money, which it might surprise some people. Coordinators usually never have guaranteed contracts, even if they are like Sala, who at this point everyone says is at the top of the defensive coordinator pay scale, he's still year to year. So you're talking about some sort of guarantees for 1 or 2 years, and then every year no penalty for taking a head coaching job. Again, it would be, I don't think the Giants job, I think, is a good job, but I think he's probably still radioactive in New York. I don't see how they could. Well, I guess I think he's a good coach, but I don't see how you could hire him in that market after how the Jets thing went. But I just think Tennessee is a great job. Atlanta would be interesting, not nearly as good as Tennessee. And in everything else, I think you could punt on it, because I think he is going to be a hot candidate. I don't think he's somebody who necessarily has to worry about taking something or his shelf life aspiring. But at the same token, the other side of me says he's locked in at the top of the market at defensive coordinator, kind of like Josh McDaniel. He's failed twice as a head coach, and we see that he's a hell of a, maybe he's just a coordinator.
Yeah.
I don't think that is Sala's fate. I think he and Kyle both have done spectacular jobs this year. And as much as I want to see him continue on with us, if he is able to get him a good team in a good situation, I would be happy for him and root for him the same way. And again, I know I'm different from 49 fans. You root for other teams. Yes, I root for D'Amico Ryans and I root for Jim Harbaugh. If not when they're playing against the 49ers, but yeah. Like yesterday was tough for me because I like both those teams. So having them, but I like both those coaches and I like the way they play. So, you know, those are my, you know, AFC teams. I really dig those teams.
And also, as we've mentioned, Sala needs that head coaching job, whatever the right one is, because that man has like eight kids, man.
And all them kids, man. And I guess I'm pumping Tennessee. Nashville is a family-friendly place. Yeah. He could, you know, that's, you know, he is deserving. This cycle or next, I think that we all are smart enough to see that Jet situation was a dumpster fire, and then especially if you understand the context that he was a dead man walking after he suggested, rightfully so, that Rodgers, we might bench Rodgers, which was not the most ridiculous thing I had ever heard at that particular point in time. It was not a very smart stance to take. Yeah. You know, if you're reading the room and what they had done to get him there, and the way at every turn they were kowtowing to his wishes, that was, you know, as principled as the stance and right as the stance might have been, it was not a very savvy political move.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was gone 2 weeks later. So, yeah. It's
all right. So
But I think he deserves another chance. He's a great coach.
So, Shelvin, even before we got started, he said, there's a chance for that number one seed still, which is bonkers. And that is maybe the most surprising thing about this run, which is that when the Niners got Brock back and, you know, everything was kind of pushing to this direction of like, you know, they need to make this run, I didn't even really see them leapfrogging the Rams. I didn't see them leapfrogging Seattle, and they haven't yet. They haven't. And you know, they're right there with those teams. But just the idea that the possibility is there for them to win out and win the division. And then would they be the number one seed in the entire NFC if that happened?
Mm-hmm.
It is incredible. They'd get a bye.
They would get a bye week, which is crazy. And again, this is somebody, you're talking to somebody who has spent this, and I probably have not enjoyed this run as much as I could have, because I have been steadfastly talking about the yeah buts. Like, you know, we've been talking all weekend about all of the, you know, what they've done the past 3 weeks. I found it a hard time to like get jazzed when you did it against the Browns, the Titans, and a depleted Colts. But look, they played all they can play is the schedule they were given. I think that context matters, but the fact that they keep winning also matters. I think they kind of balance each other out. And just to Shelvin's point, the fact that they are here with all that they've gone through this season is bonkers is the right word. It's crazy. I've been waiting for this, you know, this carriage to turn into a pumpkin. Yeah. And we are, you know, we are 6 days away, 6 days and 1 hour away from them potentially having a bye and playing as many playoff games as they could win at home, which is why would have thought that after week five, when Fred went out and we lost to Tampa, I wonder what the odds were on them being the number one seed in the NFC on that day. It was completely improbable. And it has been, I'm here and I witnessed it. I've witnessed the last 4 weeks and it still feels improbable, but you have to give these dudes the benefit of doubt at this point that, you know, they're not the best team. They are not, they're never going to be the most talented team. They just aren't, but the statistics are going to look awful. They're going to, give up a bunch of points. They're going to give up a bunch of yards. But if they can keep it close, I have to trust them at this point that in the same way Caleb had, because I've watched them every week too, because my brother's a fan, the way that Caleb got the benefit of the doubt, that I just knew that they were going to score because he's done it like five times this season in the last minute moments. It might not be the last moments for the Niners, but they've won these games over and over and over and over again. So when I look at when I do the statistical breakdown and the advanced stats on Seattle next week, it's going to tell me that they don't have a chance. My lived experience tells me that there's something going on. There's an alchemy happening between Kyle and the offense and Saleh and the defense that you're not going to be able to quantify on a spreadsheet. There is a belief that they have there. You know, you start talking about that, you know, woo-woo stuff that I don't really feel comfortable with when you start talking about belief and, you know, galvanizing and all of that. But the sum tonight, the sum was greater than its component parts. And that's what we're dealing with. So they are 60 minutes away, which is bonkers is a great word.
Have you looked at the point spread?
No.
What do you think the point spread is without looking?
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Niners by 3?
I was thinking 2.5 or 3. The Niners are favored by 4.5 points at home. That number probably comes down because I think, like you said, people are going to start doing their research and actually see how good Seattle is. But there is also we don't really believe in Sam Darnold community here.
Very strong.
Yeah. So, all right. I wanted to start just because just kind of what you were saying here with Shanahan and the offense. I don't want to overstate how Brock Purdy is playing right now. But in my vision, this might be the best I've ever seen him with the weapons he is working with. And I want to say, and maybe this is just, you know, just because I just watched this game right now and he's, you know, running option plays in the end zone. But I feel like this might be the best that he's ever played and ever run this offense right now, the way that he's playing football.
Oh, absolutely. And you can't, and I spent last week knocking down the fact that, you know, the Colts didn't have any corners, which makes a difference. If you watch that Colts game today and they didn't have Mooney still, but they had Sauce, and it completely changes their coverage schemes when they can just leave that guy over there and then the other three can do whatever they're doing on one side of the field. So that matters. But that being said, he still went out there and lit them up. You know, they are NFL players who got direct deposits last week too. So
yeah,
while they might not necessarily be the team that they were all season, it's legit. The Bears, again, are a legitimate team, and he is on fire. And like you say, this is by far, I would say, I'd venture to say easily, even including last year, that this is by far the least talented team that he has worked with. And he looks at his best. And like Collinsworth said, that he said in their interviews, Kyle is on fire calling these games, and he's giving him great plays to make, and he's making them. And he is, whoever, it doesn't even matter who's out there. He's making plays with Robinson. He's making plays with Bourne, guys who are journeymen. You know, Juwan is third in Juwan, but he's not a number one receiver. Ricky looks good. And I'm not saying all of this to diminish the talents of the guys around him, but they aren't Debo, Ayuk, and Kittle. I mean, right, they're just not, you know, so that, and it's no disrespect. You know, when I was, you know, Jake Tonge is great guy, Cal guy, Bay Area guy. So I'm rooting for him. He is not an All-Pro and Hall of Famer. So you're going to miss George Kittle. But mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm shitting on Jake Tonge just to say I would rather have George Kittle. If I was given a choice, I'd rather have George Kittle. I'd rather have the Hall of Famer. Rather have the All-Pro. But he had a great game. And so the point is, I think Brock has taken his game to another level. And there's, you know, there is a calmness about him. There is, you know, there's a swagger about him that he's always had, but it is tempered, I think. I think he's a vet now. He is it's dumb to say it that way, but he's not a rookie anymore. He's not a young player. He is far removed from Mr. Irrelevant at this point. I think we're at the point where we can put that narrative to bed. I mean, he is a very good NFL quarterback, and I agree 100%. He is playing the best that we have seen. He has taken his game to another level, and this is somebody who has led a team to a Super Bowl, and he's playing, I don't think it's controversial to say he's playing better this year than he played in 23. And I don't really even think it's close. He is playing really special.
I was having a conversation with a Bears buddy. He also does content. He's also on some podcasts. I will not name his name because this is just in text and we're talking about our teams and stuff, but he's an Iowa fan. And because Brock went to Iowa State, he was talking a little bit of mess about Brock, just saying, you know, I don't like Iowa State guys. And he's saying, you know, Brock is the best system quarterback going. And I thought about that for a second because a lot of the credit is going to go to Shanahan for creating this system, and that is some of it. But Shanahan is also very hard on his QBs and in their decision-making. Oh, yeah. And to me, Brock is a processing quarterback. Like, that is what sets him up to be as good as he is. That's what that is what changes his level and how good he can be because of his ability to process downfield. And then the flip side of watching Caleb, who that dude has every tool in the book. And Ben Johnson, as long as Ben Johnson and Caleb are a tandem, I think Caleb's going to be really special as well. But you could sort of see the difference in the way that both of those QBs kind of process, because Brock has had those, I don't know how many snaps he's had in the NFL, but he's had those extra snaps in those playoff games. And this is Caleb's second season, and already in Caleb's second season, you're like, I can see it. Like, as long as this dude stays on point, he's going to be awesome. He's exactly where that, his apex is like the Josh Allen and Drake May level, just based on his level of talent. Does he get there? Very few get there, but he's got that opportunity to do so. So what Brock is doing is impressive, because he is able to play at the level of those guys who are just way more talented than he is. So he's able to make plays. He's able to run that offense. Even last week when we were talking about how good he played against the Colts, they asked Shanahan, what'd you think about Brock? He's like, we talked about a couple of throws that he missed, but other than that, he played awesome. Mm-hmm. So he's always gonna,
And that's the thing. He's got to hold accountable. But the thing that I think is special about Brock, now I hesitate when people talk about elite, because I just don't. It's not a slight. It's not a slight to say somebody's not elite. I don't think so. I think his traits are limited. So he has a lower ceiling. Then, like, if you just a comparison we can make just tonight, I think he has a lower ceiling than Caleb. Because Caleb is just, he's fast and his arm is crazy. But Brock outdueled him today because he processes at a very, very high level. And what I think separates him for somebody like Jimmy, who did a really good job in this offense, or what heretofore has been the gold standard in this offense, Matt Ryan or Kirk Cousins, is that while he is able to process, he is also able to play out of structure in a way that those two guys really don't really have any interest in doing. They, which is at the time he was coaching them, was why Kyle liked them so much, is they did not color outside of the lines. Mm-hmm. He gave them the play, and they would execute the play. Brock is going to get out of the pocket, and he is going to challenge the defense, and he is going to make throws that are going to make Kyle come over to him and whisper in his ear.
Like the first one of the game today?
Yeah. So that's going to happen. But I think that's what lifts the ceiling. I think mm-hmm. we got to a point with Jimmy. I've softened on Jimmy in the years that have gone by. I think that was just, he got the most out of what he could give us, but he didn't have that extra to give that Brock does. He wasn't going to operate outside of the pocket. He was not going to challenge the defense 15 yards downfield. He just wasn't going to do it. And Brock is not scared. That's one thing I have always noticed about that dude from jump, is that for whatever it is, and then I had an Iowa State fan tell me that yeah, Brock's got a little YOLO to him. And you can see it. He's not fooling me on these commercials with that aw shucks Richie Cunningham shit. That dude is a killer.
The CMC commercial was making me laugh a little bit more with him and Saquon mm-hmm. calling him like a quick kissing up to the ref. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But okay, so I don't really go out on limbs about this team, about any of my sports teams, really. I think the 73-win Warriors scared me in going out on limbs because they were the best team I think I've ever seen, and then they lose in the NBA Finals. This is not really, even really a prediction, but I think Brock Purdy's playing at a level where he could win a Super Bowl with this football team. Now, he would have to play kind of like he's played these last 2 weeks throughout the tournament, because what we also saw was a defense that is just not talented enough to play with some of these other teams. So this is kind of what we were talking about last week, which is if the 49ers are going to go far in the playoffs, they're going to have to do it while winning shootouts. And that was that was kind of the preview was tonight. They stood toe-to-toe with Chicago. And they matched touchdowns until the 49ers blinked and had to punt. And then Chicago kicked the field goal, which was kind of like a blink too.
Yeah.
And then the Niners scored the last touchdown. So the last two drives of the game were the Niners holding to a field goal and then the four and out to end the game. So they stepped it up in those moments. But, you know, there are some teams where, I mean, think about Stafford and the Rams. Like, that's kind of what I was thinking about when I was watching this defense. I was like, okay, we cannot punt against some of these teams if we expect to win. However, if for whatever reason the defense is able to turn around a little bit, I do think Brock is playing at a level in which he could actually win the Super Bowl. That's how good my eyes are seeing him.
Yeah, I 100% agree. My only thought is, like you say, is with this defense. We've seen that show. We saw it with the Rams, what that looked like, with them just barbecuing our secondary. And it's a different deal with these. It starts next week, honestly, because while same Darnold is same Darnold, they have a commitment to running the ball, which I'm going to make it my business to figure out what the hell Salah is doing formation wise that is discouraging these teams to run the ball, because I was saying it all throughout the Bear game. What I know about this team is if you just keep pounding the ball, we are not going to be able to hold up down in and down out. But there is something that they are showing them that makes them decide to pass it. And, you know, kudos to him for doing it. But anytime anybody commits to running the ball, it is a track meet, because we are just not good at defending the run. The advanced stats say it, the tape says it, but there is something that he is doing. There's some kind of wand or spell that he's casting, some voodoo that he's using that is keeping these teams from doing it. And God bless them, because it makes it a lot easier for him to scheme it up against the pass than it is to try to mount up to stop the run. It's going to be interesting to see what happened to Upton Stout, because he's another guy who his stats aren't great, but he's always around the ball and he's always seems to make the timely play. And it was interesting that that while he got worked a couple of times, Chase Lucas, who was a preseason darling because of the plays he was making, he made a couple of plays tonight. And so that it's going to be interesting. Again, here we go. It's just like that just seems, and I guess maybe that's every team. But why are we always, it seems like we're always, it's always injury talk with us. And my hope was that it would kind of ease up. And it would, you talk about like a regression to the mean type situation. We lost so much early that we would, you know, get the benefit of the doubt and maybe get some injury luck down the stretch. But that does not seem to be the case because, you know, like you say, he held up pretty well against the Bears, but they are just a little better than us rushing the passer. I do not want any part of Anthony Pleasance with that Seattle front. Yeah. That is just a recipe. There's not enough help. They need a 12th player out there to help him block those dudes. So I'm hoping that Trent can go, even if it's, you know, we found ourselves in that position, you know, against the Rams in the NFC Championship game where a hobbled Trent, you know, you look back in hindsight and say, well, maybe Jalen Moore would have gave us a better chance because he was just so far gone at that point. He was just, he might have been a liability. And that, you know, the way he did not look good when he was, you know, crutching around there on the sideline. But hopefully, we got 6 days, only 6 days, and hopefully he can get in the hyperbaric chamber. Fred can let him use his hyperbaric chamber, and he can get back to health. I don't know if Trent's big ass will fit in that hyperbaric chamber. Maybe he can put his leg in there and get some kind of benefit from it.
CMC had his best rushing game of the season, I think. 6.1 yards per carry. He looked fast and fresh, but we also know he's kind of had this issue with his back, and late in the game you saw him on the sidelines like in planks and stuff, like trying to loosen it up. And again, it's another one for 6 days. You know, this guy's got to get better by Saturday night to play another football game. And how many touches do you have today? Like 30 or something? Like,
yeah,
and they used him so much. And, you know, he's peaking at the right time, but you also do worry about the wear and tear. Brian Robinson has played very well as his backup, but part of that is he doesn't have to play very much. So when he's in there, he's completely fresh. And if he has to play a little bit more, he's not going to have that, like, explosiveness coming off of the bench just because he'll be on the field more. So I don't know. That's one that worries me. As much as Kittle worries me, as much as Big Trent worries me, you're talking about the guy who Kyle trusts with the football more than anybody else. And that guy has, I think he went over 400 touches for the season. Is that true? It's really close to that. And we know that special 400 number. So that's one I'm worried about for Saturday at CMC.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've been having this byplay all season about Christian and Brian Robinson, but it would be different if it's noticeable. The drop off is noticeable. One, because he just flat out does not give you very much in the pass game. They don't really, you know, it's going to be a play action to him or they're going to hand him the ball. He's not a threat as a receiver at all. And I believe that if there's ever going to be a legitimate 1A to Christian, that player has to play both ways so that it's not like an obvious tell. Like, you know, there have been several running back tandems where that was just the case, where when this guy was in, when the Thunder back was in, he was getting the ball. They're going to hand him the ball. And if the Lightning back is in there, they're going to pass him the ball. Those aren't effective. If you're going to have somebody who is going to, that's what I've said all along about them trading JP. If they were really serious, and again, he wasn't as good a receiver as Christian is, but he was functional. If you were really serious about curtailing Christian's usage, you just keep him and allow him. You don't bring in Brian Robinson. Brian Robinson is not the type of player who is going to be who's going to take usage away from Christian McCaffrey. I don't know who that player is because, number one, he doesn't want to come out. It's going to be interesting moving forward because as he gets older, it's interesting. We saw two on primetime games. You saw Derrick Henry yesterday. He's at 32 and still looks amazing. So I think it's overblown how we, you know, I think the numbers that we have become accustomed to, like that number at running back 30 has always been the number that the decline has been precipitous at 30. I just don't know if, you know, in every case is different, but I think especially when you're talking about top tier elite, top of the food chain players like a Derrick Henry or a Christian McCaffrey, I don't know that you're going to be able, that they're going to fit into that little box. But like you say, the 400 carry thing is, that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. That's not something that you can, it might not show up this year, but you know, Saquon Barkley, if you want empirical data, he has definitely not had as good a year as he had the year before. And yep. A lot of people will attribute it to all the carries that he had the season previous.
You know, shout out to CMC too, because you remember game one, all of a sudden there's this word that he may have a similar issue with his Achilles, with the bilateral tendonite. Like, remember there was like a scare like the Saturday before the game or something where they were like, oh, he's showing up on the injury report again. And he hasn't missed. Like, he's been there every single game, and he's just been, it's not his best season, by the way. It is a very rugged season. It has been a very fight through everything possible season. It has been a tough as hell season for him. And that's what he's showing more to me than anything else, is just this toughness that he has that he probably has never gotten really that much credit for, because he's been injured before. But he's just so tough this year. He's probably the reason, if you were to put it on one player, to keep the Niners kind of just in the game, it was him, because he was doing so, like, Matt, I mean, I just go back to some of these Mac games, like Mac sees in his peripheral, like the possibility of a pass rusher sneaking around the corner, and it's dumping off to CMC. Like, he's not even taking a chance. It's Christian's there, I'm throwing it. And that was a lot of the early offense this season. So the fact that he's had two different quarterbacks, that he's, the usage is so high, and in week 17, he's having a game like this, was just tremendous. Tremendous player. It's just been awesome to watch him over these last few years.
Absolutely.
All right. So as we get ready to shut this thing down, I actually have another podcast to do here in a few minutes.
Oh, wow.
Saturday, Seahawks coming to town. We beat them all the way back in game one, and it was kind of one of those games where would not have been surprised if they lost that game, and yet they eked it out. Both teams, I feel, are a lot different than they were in week one. Detrimentally, the Niners' defense is not what it was in week one. Offensively, they are probably a little bit better than they were. I know Brock was better, because Brock was not fantastic in that game. So I'm very interested in what kind of looks they're going to give Sam, because they know Sam very well. That he's been throwing passes to their defense. So do you think the Niners are going to give Seattle the A1 defensive look? I mean, it is you win this game and you sit on the throne. You lose this game. I haven't even looked to see what the wild card situation is. If they're 5 or 6, or can they still finish 7? I haven't looked that far. But the difference between a win and a loss in this game is bigger than anything that I can imagine when it comes to playoffs. Just this one game. So, how do you think they're going to play this?
Well, first, I watched that week one game, and neither one of these teams look anything like they do now, which makes sense. We're talking about 16 weeks later. But so I don't think we're not going to be able to that tape really doesn't do any of us, either one of those teams, any good, because they're way better than they were then, and we are different. And I would say definitely offensively much better than we were then. They clearly have their identity, and your job is to stop us from getting the ball to Christian. And just when you start to, then when you start to disfigure or structurally break your defense to do so, Brock is comfortable running the ball. Brock is comfortable with throwing it to other targets when you decide that you're going to, okay, we're just going to bracket Christian. We're going to put three guys on him. And you just got, you're going to have to figure out somewhere else to go with the ball. And he's like, cool, okay, we'll just throw it to Tonjes, or we'll just throw it to Robinson. Or, you know, so that is the level that you are talking about with Brock. But I think that's what it's going to have to be. Now, the challenge with that is their defense is hellacious. They are a really, really good defense. So I just, I don't see how we score 30 points against them. And we just might have to, because I don't know how we're going to stop JSN or that offense. So we're, the recipe, I think you said it earlier, is what is gonna, it's gonna have to be run and shoot. We're gonna have to win shootouts throughout. And it's going to get with these teams. I mean, I'm just restating the point you made earlier, is that as we move along, the opponents are only get harder and harder, and they aren't going to have these glaring weaknesses. They're going to be better teams. And the question is going to be, how do our coaches figure out ways to keep us in these games so that we can kind of steal them at the end, like we did today. We did it on, we did it several times this season on defense and on offense. But my concern is that you get a, you, with these better teams, you end up getting a game. That was what my concern was with this one. When we threw that pick quick, it's like, oh shit, here we go. We're going to go down 14 or 21 points. And, you know, then it's just a different dynamic when you're playing, when you're this type of team and you're trying to play from behind. We needed to stay close, or we need to get up and be able to let Brock just play free and just, you know, we're running and gunning. We're like the 89 running Rebels. We're trying to go out there and we're trying to put up,
I thought you were going to say Houston Oilers.
There you go. We're trying to, yeah, there you go. That's probably a better analogy. We're trying to, we're trying to light up the scoreboard, baby. That's where we find ourselves at the end of 2025, going into 2026. And you know what? I'm kind of here for it.
Yeah.
You know, we have all of our, that has been, you know, that's something that really, for all the, that has really been the hallmark all the way back to the dynasty, is great defense has always been like our cornerstone. You know, we all, Joe is the GOAT, and we all love and talk about Joe. But those of us who were there know that if the defenses were subpar, we didn't, I mean, there were seasons where, you know, we would win 10 games and it would be one or two playoff wins. We weren't, didn't even sniff a championship. But all of those great teams, the hallmark of those are some fascinating barroom conversation, is which defense was better. Mm-hmm. The, you know, 88, 89. I have a soft spot for the 81 team. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, 94, and then the teams that didn't win, like the Harbaugh's teams, their defense was hellacious. We got to see the best of Alden Smith and Cowboy at the same time. We got to see Patrick Willis and Bowman. Mm-hmm. And we are, you know, we are bereft of our big talent, but like at the last play, the last series of this game, Salah is out here making it do what it do. And I mean, that it's beautiful to watch. I'm not going to claim to be able to break it down what him and Kyle are doing on a play-to-play basis, but I know enough to know that there is some real coaching going on with them, because the talent is just, we've seen more talented teams here, and but they are, this is going to go down as one of, I don't know if it's going to be one of the best seasons. That's hyperbolic, but it is going to be one of the most memorable seasons, based on all of the, you know, when you put it all in context, being 12-4 going into the last game of the season with a shot at the number one seed is, I'm just going to keep using Shelvin's bonkers. It's crazy. it is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It is. It's, and I need to, I'm going to try to enjoy it a little more.
Absolutely.
And stop waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I know, everybody's asking me what I think their chances are. And I keep going back to conversations we had in the middle of the season where we're like, they're going to compete, but they just don't have the talent with the injuries.
Right.
And even my wife tonight said, you know, do you think they have a chance? And I was like, not really, but you know, they're playing well enough. The one thing that I'm kind of waiting for, and this is where we kind of look towards Saturday, is because I think it happened when we saw them play the Rams, which is we're able to hang around and beat some of these average teams. And then the team with a lot more talent than us just kind of put their foot down. I was like, nope, sorry guys. Like, it's just not happening today. That's what I worry about with Seattle. That's what I worry about in the playoffs. But the way that their offense is playing, I don't think they're going to go backwards like they did in that Rams game, because the offense is cooking enough right now to where they're going to be competitive no matter what. And that's going to be fun to see. And we'll be back on Saturday night talking the Seahawks game, and we'll have so many more we'll have a bigger understanding of what that playoff bracket looks like Saturday night for the 49ers. At least we'll know.
Yeah.
If they win, we'll know that they're the one. If they lose, then we'll know based on some of these other games what's going to happen and where they could fall possibly. So we did not have enough time after this game to even kind of look at that stuff, but we'll have that stuff next week. Anybody who's paying attention will be looking at that stuff too. All right. So we'll be back next Saturday. So for Rod, I'm Double G. Thanks to Shelvin, my buddy Brian Ruano, Ant MNDDZ, who only came in to say that we're going to lose in the wild card. NM Lobo, who wanted to shout out Purdy, thought we were even being slightly a little negative on Purdy. I was like, no, it's just love. We're just love on Brock right now. All right. Thank you to all you folks. I'm Double G. Peace out.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.